Hey, Wednesday night we finished up with chapter 24, where the law was ratified, and at the end of the chapter, God calls Moses up into the mountain. He carries Joshua with him, and we find out in the last verse that they're going to be there 40 days and 40 nights. During the time they're in the mountain, Aaron and Hur are in charge of the affairs back in camp. And also, as the people back in the camp observe the mountain, it appears that it is on fire, like it's being devoured. But as we shift over to chapter 32, we're going to find out what's going on back in the camp. And that's what we'll be talking about today. These people have said on three different occasions, whatever the Lord says, we will do. And he warns them over and over, I think at least three times, if you consider the giving of the law and then a couple of statements he makes, about not having any gods or any graven images during this particular time. Yet, as we get into chapter 32, these people violate that particular part of the law. It's only been, as I say, 40 days since they have said, we will do. So, they're saying, what's happened to this guy, Moses? Brought us up out of Egypt. We don't know where he's at. We don't have any idea whether he's coming back or not. So they come and talk to Aaron and said, make us a god. So Aaron, one who will be the first high priest, okay, have your sons, your daughters, whatever, bring all their gold, their golden earrings, bring it to me. They did that, and look at what he did. Verse 4. He's going to say things are different, but really it says he fashioned it with a graving tool after he had made it a molten calf. That these be the gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. He goes ahead and builds an altar, proclaims it as a day of feast. He said, tomorrow is a feast unto the Lord. And they rose up the next morning and we see them offering burnt sacrifices, burnt offerings, peace offerings. They sat down to eat, to drink, and rose up to play. Sad situation, right off the bat. God's reaction. What's he call them, Charles? He calls them thy people. He talks to Moses. Look at verse 7. He said, get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. So he's basically disowned them right up front. They've broken his law, so he's disowned them. He says, what they've done, you know, they've made this molten calf, they worshipped it. They talked about it being their gods. So he said, they're stiff-necked people. I've seen and beheld it. But it's interesting he uses the word thy people as he talks to Moses. Well, what does Moses have to say, though? Well, he first says, Moses, let me just vent my wrath against them. I'll consume them, and I will make of thee great nation. So he's going to just destroy this group of people for violating his law. He's going to bring up another nation from the after Moses. But look at verse 11, though, how Moses still addresses. He addresses these people still as thy people. He said, Lord, why doth thou wax wroth against thy people? He almost uses the same words that God said. He says, which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt with great power and mighty hand. So it's interesting to see how God has disowned them, but Moses is still referring to them as God's people. We will see why he wants to do that. And what two excuses does he use as he talks with God? What does he say will happen if you destroy these people? Yeah. So you just brought them out to destroy them. Then verse 13, He says, remember. Remember the promise you made to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob. So, as a result of Moses interceding God, look at what said in verse 14. And the Lord repented to the evil which he thought to do unto his people. Here they are. God is ready to accept people back again. They were Moses' people, and now God is willing to accept these people back if they comply with his covenant. And I thought it interesting to see the play on words there as that it's this discussion unfolded. Well, he's told Moses, he said, get down to the camp. Get down. Go down and see what's happening. So Moses begins to go down with these two tables of stone that have been described as the writing of God, verse 16, the work of God, the writing of God, graven upon these stones. So as they approach the camp, Joshua hears the noise. What he thinks is going on. Yeah, he thinks while we're gone, there's a war. Moses maybe seems to be a little more in tune with what war sounds like or what singing sounds like. He says, nah, it doesn't sound like somebody's winning or somebody's getting killed. On the water and makes them drink it. That ought to got their attention. Apparently it did. Well, what is Aaron's attitude about all of this? Moses begins to question him. That's what I thought was. And kind of said, why are you getting so excited? You know how these people are. What did he say happened, James? They made me do it. And just how did this care? I mean, how did that come about? An 83-year-old man telling fairy tales, right, man? Yeah, he said, yeah, they just brought me all this stuff. I threw it in the fire, and look what jumped out. And verse 4 said, what? Said he made it. He made it. He took a graving tool, made this thing. Yeah, he said, well, it just jumped out of the fire. That's just the way it is. Well, I don't think Moses thought that was the way it happened. Well, he is not very pleased with his older brother. But not only have they made this god, but apparently they're acting in a very indecent way as they dance and so forth. Because the old King James Version says, and when Moses saw that the people were naked, for Aaron had made them naked unto their shame among them. Whatever they're doing, it's not characteristics of how people ought to behave. So Moses stands up in the camp. Here's a man who's willing to stand up for what's right. He sees these people doing what's wrong. He stands up and said, whoever's on my side, come over here. Who's on Moses' side? Levites. Descendants of Levi. They come over where Moses is at and he says, go out into the camp, play the people. People that's involved. Play every man his brother, every man his companion, every man his neighbor. Doesn't matter who they are. They're doing what they should not do. Take care of it. There were 3,000 men that day who were killed. But Moses has some advice for these people. He says, consecrate yourself today to the Lord, every man upon his son, upon his brother. He may bestow upon you a blessing this day. Moses is not giving up on these people. He tells them the very next day, you have sinned a great sin. Now I will go up unto the Lord. Peradventure, I shall make an atonement for you. So he's going to plead their case for the Lord for the great sin that they had committed in making this God of gold. So, as he talks with God, look at this man, Moses. God has said, I'm going to destroy these people and I'm going to make of you a great nation. What's Moses' attitude, though? Come on, Marcia, speak up. God, blot me out. Give these people, you won't forgive them. Blot me out of thy book which thou hast written. God was real keen on that, God's sake. Moses, you're not guilty. Whoever is the one that sinned, that's the one that needs to pay the price. That's the one will I blot out of my book. He said, therefore now go, lead the people into the place which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I will visit their sin upon them. Lord, plague the people, because they had made the calf which Aaron made. Comments on chapter. Sad situation. Rob?
Yeah.
Well, I think when he specifically talks about verse 27, when he says, slay every man, his brother, whatever, I think he's saying those that are guilty. Probably is what he's saying, Rob. Yeah, probably. I couldn't imagine 600,000 men maybe out there jumping around doing whatever they ought not to do. Probably a group of that would be my answer to that. Anybody else have a suggestion? We know even those people before knew there was something out there too. You know, as we read the book of by faith, you know, they look for that city.
Right.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. So the book of life. So they recognize, at least Moses recognized, there is life beyond physical life. Okay, as we get into chapter 33, though, God says, go ahead and lead these people, and my angel is going to go before you. He reiterates that in verse 2. I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanites and so forth in this land which is described as a land flowing with milk and honey. But what's the caveat? But I'm not going to be a part of it. I said, I'm not going to go with you. I'm going to send my angel. But I will not go up in the midst of thee because you're a stiff-necked people. And he said, lest I consume you in the way. God says, I might just kill the whole bunch again as they go into the land because of the way they're acting. Of course, when the people heard this, it said they mourned. No man did put on him his. So they recognize they have broken God's covenant. Very unhappy with them. Instead of saying, I will go and take care of you, he's saying, I'm not going to go. Because I might just vent my wrath again. May kill you along the way. Because in verse 5 and 6 it says, for the Lord had said to Moses, he had described these people, stiff-necked, and he had said, tell them not to put their ornaments on, that I may know what to do with them. That's when he said they stripped them off by the Mount Horeb. But Moses, the King James Version, uses in verse 7 the word tabernacle, pitching a tabernacle. Of course, we know that the tabernacle has not been built at this particular point in time, so that would be more like a tent. It's a portable structure. So Moses put a place outside the camp so that he could go into that area, talk with God, and see what needs to be done with these particular people. So he goes out, and as he goes out and goes into the tent, verse 9 indicates that these people stood and watched as he went and to see what was going to happen. And as it said, as he came to pass that as he entered into the tabernacle or the tent, there was a cloudy pillar descended and stood at the door of the tent. The Lord talked with Moses, and that the people rose up and worshiped every man in his tent. So there is a point that has gotten over to these people. They've broken the law. God's dissatisfied with you. Moses is trying to rectify that situation. Looks like these people are trying to do whatever they need to do. Verse 11 is a very interesting verse. Don't know whether this is said about anybody else or not. Look at what it said about the communication between the Lord and Moses. The Lord spoke unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his. That is a comment that I just don't know that's made about anything. That shows a relationship that Moses had come into being with the Lord. But he's got his trusty servant there, Joshua, with him. As Moses would come back and begin to talk to the people, Joshua would stay there and almost, as you would say, guard the tent while Moses was gone. Moses kind of, as he talks with God, how would you kind of summarize the situation here? What is Moses kind of asking God to do about verses 12 through 16? I asked that question maybe somewhere along the line. Number 23, as Moses continues to intercede for the people, how would you summarize Moses' request? He basically asking God to explain a little bit more fully his plan. Says, show me now, look at verse 13, show me now thy way that I may know thee. Really wanting to understand. Now, God has said, I'm going to send my angel. I'm not going to go. I'm sure that has Moses concerned. Then he's talking to God face to face as he intercedes with these people and so forth. But he's wanting God, I think, to clarify or make it just as clear as he could, where he could understand exactly what's going to happen from this point. That's kind of the way I read those verses. So as part of that, verse 17, the Lord said unto Moses, I will do the thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name, aided by the fact that they've talked face to face. So Moses said, I beseech thee, show me thy glory. God begins to talk to Moses about the situation. He said, I will show thee my glory, but some stipulation that he puts on Moses' request. Verse 20. But he said, thou canst not see my face, for there shall no man see me. So the next few verses describes how he's going to satisfy Moses' request, I guess. Said, it shall come to pass. Well, he said, behold, there's a place by me. Thou shalt stand upon a rock. Come to pass, while my glory passes by, that I will put thee in a cleft of the rock and cover thee with my hand while I pass by. And I will take away my hand. Thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shall not be seen. So this is as close as God is going to allow Moses to come. Not going to let him see him face to face. He is going to pass very nearby. Let Moses see his backside. Because he said, if you see my face, not live. So this would seem to satisfy Moses as what he had asked God to do. Comments on chapter 33. Chapter 34. We see Moses going back up into the mountain. A couple of things different about this time. What do you see that's different from the first time he went up? He's got a little work to do himself to start with. First time God said, just come up here. Apparently the tables of stone were already there. But he's telling him, hew the two tables of stone like unto the first. Moses has got to do some work to start with. What else is different? Who's not going this time? Moses is going to go by himself. Joshua's not going to go this time. He went the first time and stayed the 40 days and 40 nights with Moses. But this time, he said, come by yourself. Present thyself there to me in the top of the mountain. He warns these people. He warns, asked Moses to warn these people again about not approaching the mountain. Verse 3, no man shall come up with thee, neither let any man be seen throughout all the mountain, neither let the flocks nor herds feed before that mountain. Remember how he had told Moses to put bounds around it back in chapter 19, chapter 20? Now he's reminding him again, you're the only one I want to see on this mountain. No flocks, nobody else. So Moses hews out the stones like the first. I like the comment, and Moses rose up early in the morning and went up unto Mount Sinai as the Lord commanded him, took in his hands the two tables of stone. Remember anybody else that the Bible talks about? Almost without exception, when God would tell him to do something, it would say, and he arose early in the morning. Or any of that from last quarter, maybe? We even talk about that. Abraham. Right. Abraham. Almost without exception. And Abraham arose early, did whatever God asked him. So we see the same characteristic here of Moses as demonstrated by Abraham back years and years before. So the Lord descends in a cloud, stood with him there, proclaimed the name of the Lord. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed, Lord, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, abundant in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, giving iniquity and transgression and sin, that will be by no means clear the guilty, by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the children's children, to the third and to the fourth generations. Moses made haste and bowed his head toward the earth and worshiped. Then he asked the Lord again, if I have found grace in thy sight, Lord, let my Lord, I pray thee, go among us, for as a stiff-necked people, pardon our iniquity and our sin, take us for thine inheritance. So Moses is not willing, it doesn't seem like. He's not willing to continue on the journey, lest the relationship between God and these people be right. Give our sins and take us inheritance that you have promised. So what is God's response? Verse 10 says, behold, I make a covenant. Here we see God making this covenant again, giving the people for the sin that they have committed based on their attitude that we talked about over in verses there in chapter 33. So he's willing to accept these people back into a relationship with him. He promises that they will see some things that they have never seen before. Says, behold, before all thy people, I will do marvels such as have not been done in the earth, all the earth, nor in any nation. All the people among which thou art shall see the works of the Lord, for it is a terrible thing that I will do with them. Then he has some words that he wants to put on Moses. Verse 11, observe thou that which I command thee this day. So Moses has a responsibility to observe, and we noticed back in one of the previous chapters, chapter 24, as God gave the law, he said, I'm giving you this law. What's your responsibility? Teach it. Moses is the leader. He's understanding what God wants. It's his responsibility to pass it on to these people. Again, in verse 12, he says, take heed to thyself, talking about when they get into the land. And we talked about this, not making a covenant. And Rick pointed out that's one of the first things they did, made a covenant with the Gibeonites. They were tricked. But he said, don't make any covenant with the inhabitants of the land, lest they be a snare. Here he tells them again, what about these gods and graven images? He's told them about three times now. This makes the fourth time, I believe. Destroy their altars, break their images, cut down their groves, for thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God. So he's warning these people time and time and time again. Don't get tangled up with these people planning to marry. He talks again about some of the feast beginning in verse 18. Talked about these, I guess, in chapter 23. But he reminds them again of the three feasts Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is the Passover. Talks about the Sabbath day. Talks in verse 22 about the Feast of Weeks, which is the first fruits of the harvest are coming in. Then the Feast of Ingathering at the end of the year. So he reiterates three feasts that he wants. He talks about which, when it would be observed and what type animals would be sacrificed and so forth. So he keeps pounding on these people. Said many times, it's a work in progress. God's continuing to try to bring these people into the type of people that he wants them to be. All right, verse 27, he talks about writing the words down, because these are the words I have made a covenant with thee and with Israel. So we see without a doubt that this relationship that was broken is now reestablished while Moses was there 40 days and 40 nights. Interesting comment in verse 28. What about these 40 days and 40 nights? Didn't eat or drink. I don't think it was said, this was not mentioned the first time when Moses was in the mountain, I don't think. What does that remind you of? Jesus when he was tempted, yeah, Matthew chapter 4. 40 days and 40 nights without water or drink. This had to be a very consuming time, a very exhausting situation for Moses. But he has the tables of stone with the words of the covenant described as the Ten Commandments. So as he comes down to the from the mountain and begins to talk to the people, what's their reaction? Yeah, they were afraid. Yeah, they were afraid because faith shone. He's been in the presence of God now these 40 days and comes down and these people look at him and they don't really know what to do other than they were afraid to talk to him. Oh, the skin of his face shone. They were afraid to come nigh unto him. Verse 30. But Moses calls the people together, Aaron and the rulers and so forth, and talks with them. And afterwards, it said the children of Israel came nigh, gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken with him in the Mount Sinai. But there's a situation. He would have the veil on sometime. He'd have the veil off sometime. When would he have it on? After he finished talking to him, he'd put it on. Then when he would be in the presence of God, he would have it on. Is that right? Okay. And then he would keep it off until he talked to the people again. And then when he finished talking to the people, he'd put it back on until he went in to get all that right then. So when Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he took the veil off until he came out. Came out and spake unto the children of Israel that which was commanded. And the children of Israel saw the face of Moses and shone, and Moses put the veil upon his face again until he went in to speak with the Lord again. That's the way it was. He'd have it off when he talked with the Lord and when he talked to the people. But in the meantime, after he finished talking, before he went back, he would have the veil on. Okay? Very exciting times, camp. But Aaron and Hur, they were left in charge, and they did not behave in the way that they should have as the leaders. Moses had left them in charge, and they kind of blew it. Comments on this particular chapter or anything today? We've got a minute or two, but that's about okay, Brent. Faded away also. Okay. Good point. Charles, you had a comment? Yeah. All right. I will try to get some copies next Sunday. So we'll be singing Wednesday night. Next Sunday, before Sunday, I'll try to get you some notes on the tabernacle. That's what we'll be looking at. And then the last lesson will be on the sacrifices. I've got the material prepared. I just don't have copies of it. So I'll try to get that to you tonight or Wednesday night. Thanks for your comment.